Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hunted Hero Hunting, 2nd Edition, by Timothy Ellis, narrated by Graham Halstead. 1.
Freeze, mother bitch!
We both went rigid, except for the part of me which already was, that suddenly wasn't. My head turned towards the voice. The moment of surprise lingered as I gaped at the security droid pointing two stunners at us. Awareness of movement brought my attention back to the girl straddled over me. Her arm started to descend, something in her hand. A gun went off, and she was blasted off me to land on the floor near the wall. I gaped first at the naked girl on the floor, and then at the security droid who'd shot her. Jane? I asked. Jane had been using clever suit programming to put the droid into a form of chameleon mode against the wall, where it had been completely invisible to us. The girl hadn't known it was there, and I'd forgotten.
"Don't touch the hairpin," she said through the droid. "It's poisoned, and she was about to stab you with it."
"Where did you get freeze, mother bitch, from?"
"You don't want to know."
I probably didn't, either. Jane has a habit of following up on what I collected, watched, and read, and inserting it back into our conversations. The price you pay for getting the top-of-the-line AI, I guess. Eccentric was a good way of describing her personality. Maybe it was just me. I didn't recall a specific reference in this case. "Venus Trap?" I asked.
"Venus Trap," she confirmed.
I jumped up off the bed and went over to the still form of the naked girl. Fallen from her right hand was an antique hairpin. It had the shape of a cat on top, with a long, thin, sharp end. The point did appear to be wet. I checked her hair. There was a tiny scabbard fixed to her hair, which must have kept her protected from the poison. I dressed and pinged station security for a team to attend. They showed up quickly, and I met them at the door to my hotel suite. The leader identified himself as Sergeant Allen, and I led him and the three members of his team into the bedroom. Allen went over to the still girl and took a good look at her face.
"Well, bugger me," he said. "Do you know who you have here?"
I shook my head.
"This is Lisa Santiago, one of the best assassins in the business."
As shocks go, it was a good one. I was already 2 for 2 with the Santiago family, except in their cases they were both dead.
"Santiago?" I asked.
"Yes, Louis Santiago's daughter, wanted in every sector. You want to tell me what happened?"
"Friends of mine left today," he nodded. "I was feeling a little lost without them. Spent some time on the Mercenary Guild ranges, ate a lonely dinner, and decided I needed some company."
"So you decided to pick up an assassin?" he interjected with a grin.
"No, I wasn't intending to pick up anyone. After dinner, I went to the nightclub, danced a bit by myself on the side of the dance floor, and did some line dancing. Somewhere during the evening, I found myself dancing with this cute blonde." I indicated the form on the floor. "We started talking as well as anyone can talk in a disco environment and ended up here. She was on top of me on the bed when my security droid told her to freeze, and when she didn't, shot her with a stunner. I dressed and pinged security immediately. My droid says the hairpin on the floor is poisoned, so be careful of it." The security officer, about to pick it up, jerked his hand away.
"Does your security droid have a feed of the event?" Allen asked.
"Jane?"
"Yes, John."
Allen looked questioning at me, hearing the female voice come from a droid.
"Ship's AI controlling the droid," I said.
He nodded. "Do you want the feed? I guess it will be somewhat R-rated."
"Yes, please. We need a definite offense to charge her with.
and assault with intent to kill will do just fine to start with. We do need to prove it. Don't worry, it will be handled discreetly, and only the key people in the case and the judge will get to see what happened, and they'll only see the actual attempted assault. We'll take her into custody and send the hairpin for analysis. Even if it doesn't come back as poisoned, it's still attack with a deadly weapon, as the point would have killed if she hit you in the right place. And take it from me, she was an expert. Some of her victims had only a tiny hole in them, and in several cases, the hole was in the eye. I winced and told Jane to pulse the feed to Sergeant Allen. Another security officer entered with a sled. Lisa was gently placed on to the sled, still naked, and secured to it. Her clothes were collected and placed in an evidence bag. Sergeant Allen put on thick gloves and retrieved the hairpin, putting it in another evidence bag. The sled and the other officers left. We'll advise the general's office and the guilds of Santiago's capture as soon as she's in a safe place. I guess you can expect some appreciation for that. He grinned. I escorted him out. I sat in an easy chair in the sitting room and thought about what had happened. Lesson learned, I thought. Teach me to bring home the first girl to dance with me, the first time I go out on my own. I'd every reason to be totally paranoid, and yet I wasn't. Ignoring reality was not conducive to long life. I sighed. I sent off a search, looking for sector or guild overlays which might be able to let me know if someone nearby was on their wanted lists. I already had sensors which would tell me if a weapon was close, but this obviously was not enough. And it had failed to identify the hairpin as a weapon. Damn, I'd actually complimented her on her hairstyle and the cat on the hairpin. She must have been laughing at me inside the whole time. The search came back with sensor overlays from Australian Sector Military and the Bounty Hunters Guild. The former I could access because I held the rank of flight officer in the sector militia. The latter because I was a member of the guild. The former was free. I had to buy the second. No big deal for the security it offered. I sat there, pondering the last few weeks. I didn't seem to have any control over events at the moment. Picking up an assassin and letting her almost kill me just seemed to be par for the course and part of my current luck. I sighed. Too much had happened in a short time, and I felt as if I was lurching uncontrollably from one disaster to the next. One good thing? I didn't have to worry about credits. People seemed to appreciate the actions I'd taken so far and were still dumping credits on me. The bounty system worked as long as you stayed alive. I was working on it, but apparently not hard enough. I needed to do better. I stripped off and had a long shower. The bruises I'd gained from my encounter with the first Santiago were finally beginning to fade, but I still ached. The emotional battering of the evening didn't help either. I went to bed. 2. For the first time since I'd left hospital 10 days earlier, I woke up alone. I felt sluggish and listless, but hauled myself out of bed and into the shower. The bruising I'd received 2 weeks before was now definitely fading, but I still had a general ache all the way down my left side. Hot water helped, as it usually did. I ignored breakfast and sat in an easy chair. The security droid, now back in its suit shape of Jane's alter ego, was against the wall by the door. She was already so good at mimicking a human now, even facial expression was too good to pick as artificial. I started in on the emails on my pad. The general's aide had sent me a copy of a news broadcast announcing the capture, by yours truly, of the most wanted assassin anywhere along the spine. Apparently I was not available for comment, but had issued a short statement saying I had been attacked by Ms. Santiago and had captured her without knowing who she was. Bounties were still coming in for the ships I'd killed the day before yesterday. Being a 12-1 victory, it had already been headline news without me adding to it with this latest fiasco. I needed to cultivate a lower profile. Since I wasn't actually aiming for any profile, I was not sure how I went about lessening it.
Bob Durr from Sydney Shipyard had sent me specs for the new ship I wanted. I checked them over, tweaked a few details, made some suggestions, and sent it back to him. Feeling the need for exercise, I tooled up and set off for the Mercenary Guild assault courses with Jane behind me. We both had our sensors on full sensitivity. The way my luck was holding, I could expect another attack at any moment. Paranoia seemed to be a good word to hang on to. I strode along now with a minimal limp. Amanda had introduced me to the assault courses, and I wished she was here now. Feeling the need for exercise which focused the mind, or at least one not focused on my general woes, I went through each of the courses trying for a higher score on each. Tired and sweaty at the end of the last one, I found I'd done better with a score of 90 for the first time. I went straight on to the shooting ranges. Even tired, I managed to increase my scores there as well. I borrowed a long gun with the same outcome. As I was about to take the long gun back, the range manager came up to me and asked if I'd like to take another test. Intrigued, I agreed. He proceeded to program the range for a set of random targets at various ranges. He warned me I may need to use either my handguns or the rifle interchangeably. He set the sequence running, and I worked through a series of targets at all sorts of distances. This was mainly with the long gun, but several times I had to quickly shift it to one hand or the other and draw and fire my Gatling stunners. At the end, I was surprised to see I'd scored 95%. This was in spite of my handguns firing 6 times for most other lasers once. I was also surprised to see I'd hit the target furthest away, which was well outside the range I'd normally been firing at. The manager was impressed and told me my Mercenary Guild profile would now also contain marksman and sniper notations. Amanda was going to be pleased, I knew. After returning the long gun, I decided to pay a visit to the Tool Man. I hadn't been to his store before. When I'd bought my guns and suit from him, he'd come to me at the hotel. It didn't take long to get there from the firing ranges. I asked him about long guns and what he recommended for me. He knew I was a pilot and had been on a mercenary mission and might do so again. He brought out several suggestions. One was a standard long gun for medium-range shooting. The other was a sniper rifle. He accessed my scores at the Mercenary Guild and recommended the sniper. But I decided to get both, with spare charges for them. Neither converted to stunners, so they could not be used on a station. He went off and came back with 2 new ones, each in its own bag, with included back holster overlays for my suit. He glazed over for a minute and pulsed me an authorization to carry long guns on stations. I checked my PC profile, and the authorization was listed there, making it easy for station personnel to check I was allowed to be carrying them on station, even if I wasn't actually allowed to fire them. Jane had been standing just inside the door the whole time, and I'd noticed the tool man giving her glances. Finally, he asked, "Is that a droid?" "Yes," I said. "It's wearing one of your suits and using it to emulate being a human." I had Jane demonstrate the suit changing back to a belt so he could see the security droid underneath and then back into her alter ego form. "That's astounding. I wasn't aware they could do that. May I ask how?" "Friend of mine has been doing suit programming, mainly clothes, animals, and some other things. My ship AI is actually controlling the droid and is mimicking a human face to be less conspicuous." "Is he interested in marketing the program?" "I suggested it to him, but I think he's still trying to find the limits of what he can do. At some point, I'm sure he'll be willing to market it." "There would definitely be a market. Tell him to contact me when he's next here." "I will.
There is something else you can help me with. I'm wearing your suit all the time now, but I'm worried that it won't give me enough protection. As you may have heard, I was ambushed by 12 ships the other day. I'm worried the same could happen on station, and a dozen laser hits at the same time might be fatal, even with the suit on.
That's very likely under the circumstance, yes. A standard suit is designed mainly for decompression events and sporadic random fire. Step this way, please.
He led me into another room. I saw one of the combat suits my mercenary friends used, standing by itself in the middle of the floor. I went to look at it.
Medium-level combat armor, useful for any engagement with light to medium arms. Not good enough for artillery-level lasers. Excellent for any activity outside a ship in space where your current suit is not considered enough protection.
Is this the top-of-the-range model? I asked.
No, but at a glance you won't tell between them. Difference is mainly in how much damage it can take, and quality of sensors.
What do Colonel Smith's people use?
Several models up, but not the top of the range. As always, budget determines purchase as much as need does. For you, what they have will do.
I'll get the top of the range. Can I have one with the same color scheme as the droid is wearing?
That can be done.
He looked hard at the droid, presumably doing a scan of the color and arm stripes. Jane was wearing what I called my slinky red uniform. It was a variation on what my mercenary friends wore. Theirs was black.
What about weapons? The standard for this suit is the pulse rifle. It slots onto the back when not in use. Heavy pulse laser fire with rapid recharge. The top models have a faster rate of fire and a longer-lasting charge pack. The top of range is called a heavy pulse rifle, as its pulse is more powerful and recharge is quicker. Big difference in price.
Can they be fired one-handed?
By the suit, yes. Without the suit, only an extremely strong person will be able to.
You would not. It was a definite statement.
I'll have two of the top of the range, thanks. What about for walking around in the station? For station use, I recommend lower arm-mounted stunners. They are fired by PC or voice command. There's also a manual fire button in the head section, which is depressed by the chin. Not comfortable, but it means you can still fire if your comms are fried.
What about internal space? Will I be able to wear my handguns into the suit?
It would be useful to be armed if I needed to exit the suit at any time and still be able to defend myself. This can be adjusted. Stand still for a moment.
He appeared to scan me as I was, with both Gatling stunners on.
Yes, this can be accommodated. The inside dimensions will be adjusted to allow you to step in as you are now. This will, of course, cost extra.
I didn't bother asking how much.
That will be fine, thanks. Now, what about my original concern? You need suit booster.
He picked something up which looked like a belt buckle.
This attaches to suit. When in belt mode, it replaces belt buckle, completely integrated. With threat, adds triple thickness to suit. Alas, it doubles price. Most who purchase belt have no need. Still, for you, necessary it seems to be.
His accent was becoming work to understand. I wondered if English was his second language and what the first might be. Again, I didn't bother asking the price. I just said I'd have two. He went out and returned with two small boxes. He opened them, removed the boosters, and placed one on my existing belt buckle. There was a pause, and the booster became the belt buckle, slightly larger in size. A pop-up appeared asking to update my suit programs. I authorized it. There was some configuring to do, so I did it immediately. I couldn't see the point of having the suit activate without the booster protection. Synchronized, I double-checked the suit was on hair trigger reaction to any threat. I indicated Jane, and he did the same for her belt. He pinged me an invoice, and I paid, asking him to deliver the combat suit and pulse guns to my ship, Excalibur, over on the shipyard. He promised to have it there later in the day. I thanked him, returned to the main store, gathered up my long guns, and departed.
Next stop was the Chinese restaurant. I asked them if they did takeaway in quantity. They did. I ordered 60 half meals each of the Mongolian beef, sweet and sour pork authentic, and fried rice. They would be packaged for long-term storage. My idea was to be able to eat a mixed dinner of one pack of each of them. I could live for a while on Chinese food without getting tired of it. I paid and had them delivered to Excalibur. Following on, the Spacer supermarket was next. I ordered a dozen 24-packs of bottled water in the 600-milliliter size, and a dozen loaves of shrink-wrapped bread, designed to remain fresh for as long as the package was unopened. Also, the makings of ham salad sandwiches, again in shrink-wrapped packaging for long storage. I went around, selecting some fruit and anything else I could think might be useful in an unused kitchen. It occurred I needed plates, utensils, and stuff like that. Hot mitts, too. I kept on having ideas and backtracking my way around the aisles. Another delivery to Excalibur. While I had no real plans to be spending an extended amount of time away from stations, I was aware each time I did spend time on a station, I was a target for the locals wanting to collect on the bounty on me. It was now at a level where I could expect opportunists to try for it, being over a million credits. So having a food store on Excalibur would allow me to keep each time on station short. I went back to the hotel and made myself some lunch. Back in my easy chair and checking emails again, I saw a large payment had gone in from Earth Sector already for the capture of Lisa Santiago. There was also a media story about how there was now an extradition battle going on between all those who wanted her for trial. I had to laugh. My next task was to purchase what my uncle's ship, Wanderer, had come here to get in the first place. The ship had been repaired from the battle which had killed my uncle and left me badly hurt. I'd survived, but it had brought the wrath of a pirate group down on me. With the improvements being made to my own ship, I was hopeful I could deliver Wanderer back to our starting point, Outback Orbital Station, in the next few days. Even if her cargo could not go down to the planet for another year, it still needed to be delivered to the orbital station. As well as buying what was on the purchase list, I went to the trouble of buying a space container and filling it with more of what was on the purchase list. What went on Wanderer was paid for by the family business. The rest I paid for myself. I turned to Jane's droid by the door. Jane, can you fly Wanderer without affecting her existing AI?
Yes, I can, as long as the AI releases control to me.
Can you please contact Wanderer and request permission? If given, can you fly Wanderer over here? I'll organize a freighter landing bay, one large enough for a container as well. There was a pause.
Confirmed. Do you want me to move her now?
No, I'll let you know. Probably tomorrow morning. I sent a ping to Bob at the shipyard to let him know Jane would be moving Wanderer tomorrow and Excalibur would be getting some deliveries later today, including food. Then I pinged Sydney Station Control for a bay large enough for Wanderer and a container. A short time later, I was pinged a landing bay number, which I passed on to Jane and to the company supplying the container. I advised those I was buying from to deliver to that bay the following day. The afternoon almost done, I went off for a spa. An hour soaking did me a lot of good, but being there alone wasn't much fun. I missed the twins. Amanda and Alicia naked did liven up a spa. Wasn't the same after you'd experienced them. I had room service send me up some dinner and watched some very old Who episodes on the flat screen into the late evening. This was the first time I'd watched anything since leaving Gaia, but it reminded me I was alone. Still, I enjoyed the episodes and headed off to bed.
3. I was sitting in my command chair, in space. No ship, no life support, no nothing. Just me, in my chair, in space. Space around me was not familiar. As I looked around, I saw no planets. There were many asteroid fields. In the distance, 2 gas giants. A movement in front of me caught my eye.
A black dot had appeared at long range. As I watched, another dot appeared. Then another. Then 10, 100, 1,000. Space in front of me turned black. I bolted upright in bed, sweaty and terrified. It was the usual dream, but I'd been alone this time. The last several dreams had been different, with people standing behind me. I'd just become used to that, and now it had returned to before I'd met Amanda, Alicia, and Allison. I wondered what it meant. I gave Jane the go-ahead to move Wanderer after she'd brought half the security droids to Wanderer and left the other half to protect Excalibur. She reported Excalibur was nearly ready. I quickly showered, dressed, and tooled up before heading to the landing bay. The container was already there. I had it moved so Wanderer could land and monitored Wanderer's flight using the sensors in her cockpit. Jane set her down in the landing area without so much as a bump, ready to leave without needing to turn first. Once the space door was closed and the landing bay aired up, I had her extend the grav sled from underneath, set it flat on the ground, and had the container moved onto it. I set the security droids to protect both the ship and the cargo. Throughout the morning, loading of both the ship and the container went on. I was too busy with deliveries, invoices, and payments to think about anything else. Loading complete, I code-locked both the ship and the container and headed back to the hotel for lunch. The Jane droid accompanied me, leaving the others to guard the landing bay. Within my emails were the specs for the new ship. I threw them onto the room comms unit and studied them in 3D. The price was scary. There wouldn't be any change from 200 million credits. This didn't include the exchange value of the last ships I'd salvaged, which made the ship affordable, but it was still going to be close. A lot depended on how many more bounties came in before I needed to pay. Mind you, with my luck, I'd be attacked again really soon. So, as long as I kept surviving, salvaging ships, and taking prisoners, the credits would keep rolling in. Note to self, don't get cocky. With that thought, I suddenly stopped. I sat there for a moment, without moving. What was I doing? 200 million for a ship? Was I crazy? What the hell did I think I was going to be doing? Gallivanting around the galaxy? Ridding the universe of bad guys? I was a kid, for divine sake. I might be 18 by standard age, but back home I was only 16. I was too young for this sort of thing. I didn't choose this life. I want my old life back. I broke down and cried. After a bit, I stopped and got a grip. I had a lot of credits. I hadn't planned this. It had happened all on its own. All I did was what seemed necessary at the time. People tried to kill me. I survived. They didn't. Other people were appreciative and gave me credits. Okay, I had credits. I could find myself a hole here somewhere and disappear. In a year's time, I could return to Gaia, buy my own habitat if I wanted to, and live comfortably doing nothing for the rest of my life. You did not agree to do that. I sighed. Life contract stuff. We believe, before you're born, you agree to a life contract which includes all the important things you'll be doing during the lifetime. So, at the soul level, I'd agreed to this shit. There wasn't any going home and living happily ever after. At least not this year. Logic caught up with emotion. Even if I could go home now, I'd be a kid there still. No matter how many credits I had to my name, no one was going to let me spend much of it. Not until I turned 21, when I could legally own property. Even if I went back with a ship, it would not be deemed my own property until 21. It would either be taken over by the family or put in storage. Going home was not an acceptable choice. In any case, going home was not an option for almost another year. The door to Gaia was closed. The closest I could get was Outback Orbital. I needed to take Wanderer back there anyway. I could just stay there. Not safe. No, that was the problem. I'd brought down on me the wrath of someone who didn't care how many died to accomplish my own.
The old adage, you can run, but you can't hide, seemed to apply.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?